digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
So, on this segment of Digging in the Dirt, I have with me today, delightfully so, director Sarah Marbrook, who has done a wonderful film called The Food Cure, Hope, or Hype. I just saw it tonight and I was completely impressed.
Thank you so much.
It's not out yet, is it?
No, it'll come out sometime probably in the first quarter of 2019 for general audiences.
Let's talk about it. What made you decide to follow six patients who have cancer and are trying alternative methods of healing?
So I am a journalist and I was working in the Middle East for a long time, and I wanted to take a break from that and do something completely different. And I heard about these people who are eating carrots and apples and claiming that they can cure cancer with that. And I heard that on the radio and it outraged me. I felt, that's just a crazy thing to say to people. That two of my closest friends are oncologists, so I thought I knew a little something about cancer and about cancer treatment. And so I wanted to do a magazine story originally to debunk, these crazy nutritional treatments. And I went to Mexico, to Tijuana, where there's a lot of alternative cancer clinics. It's actually called the Cancer Belt because there are so many clinics there. And American and Canadian patients go there to get treated with alternative treatments. And I looked at different clinics, and then I found one that was treating people with what's called the Gerson therapy, which is a very extreme diet, very radical, very hard to follow. And I decided that's what I was going to look at in more detail.
So you thought that there's a lot of quackery in all these different treatments?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely thought it was quackery. I mean, it's just common sense. You can't obviously treat cancer just with food. We all eat food. Like, we would know, right? If a diet could heal cancer, like, it would be the first thing everybody would do. That's what I thought. It was, like, completely ridiculous to claim something like that.
So how'd you come up with your six people that were in the film?
So I did a little bit of research, and I contacted authorities, cancer authorities, and asked them for their statistics on this treatment and on other treatments, and was very surprised that they didn't have any. So they said, well, no, we don't think these treatments are valid, but we actually have no studies proving that they don't work or that they work. There are no studies. So I found that pretty shocking. So that's when I decided to follow actual cases. And then I looked for people who were willing to be filmed over time, no matter what the outcome.
Why did you decide to do it that way? That's a very difficult thing to start to plan.
It's a difficult thing, but it seemed to me like it was the only way, since there's no data. There's no statistics, so it's just hearsay. One side says, oh, we're curing hundreds of patients. The other side says, this is quackery. There are no studies. There's no proof. So what am I going to write as a journalist? I couldn't say anything objectively about it except one side claims this and the other side claims that. So how do you know? So I thought, well, if I follow the stories of patients, it's never going to be a scientific study, and I didn't, attempt to do a scientific study, but at least it'll give some kind of indication. And so that's what I decided to.
So when did this start? It's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago. I started filming in 2010.
Wow.
Yeah, and the last updates in the film of these six patients are filmed in 2017.
So what you were saying, though, it's not really quite completed yet.
I hope it is more or less completed. I don't want to keep doing this for the rest of my life, but So we did a tour with a film around the United States and Canada last summer, and we've gotten a lot of very, very good responses, and actually a lot of doctors and researchers who are very interested in the topic and who, suddenly I'm getting interviews with people that I wouldn't have been able to get before. And so I'm doing some additional interviews, and then the final version will come out next year.
And you think you may get some television play on it? Or any big network might pick it up? Or
you know what? Because it's such a controversial topic, I don't think so. We're not even attempting it. I mean, I wouldn't say no if there was interest, but we're just going to go indie, with indie distribution, and you know, VOD, video on demand, and that's how most.
So let's go back to your people. It's an amazing cast of characters you assembled. You got lucky on a couple people like Fred and Jeremiah.
Oh, very lucky, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Fred is, there's a lot of humor in your film for such a serious subject.
Yeah.
I mean, cancer is not funny.
No, but Fred is very funny.
Very
he's
funny.
He's amazing. He actually came to a lot of the screenings in Canada. And I mean, the audiences loved him because he's so adorable and he's just so utterly funny, and he has this amazing, it was so fun filming him. I was always happy to go to Fred and Susan's house because I would actually stay with the patients, sometimes for a week at a time, stay in their house in order to really see how they're doing. You know, if you just go for an interview, you're not going to see anything. So I actually spent a lot of time with these people, so I'm so happy that they're all, you know, I loved them all. I became really close friends and really close to them all.
That's cool. And when you went, you had to go with a crew, or did you shoot yourself?
Usually I shot most of it myself. Yes. So sometimes I went with a crew at the very beginning, but then I realized that doesn't give you the same kind of access and the same...
Or intimacy.
Yeah, intimacy. And people just connect in a different way, one-on-one. So I did most of it myself.
And from what your film shows, and shows really well, it's an incredibly tough regime to stick to get this cure, this Gerson method. Do you want to explain what it is, basically? And then we can talk about Fred and how he dealt with it with humor.
Sure. So the Gerson therapy, which is what 5 out of the 6 patients in my film did, it involves sort of hourly fresh-pressed vegetable juices, which, you know, it takes about 15 minutes to make one of these juices. It has to be consumed fresh because otherwise these juices lose the enzymes and some of the nutritional value. So they're basically, they have 45 minutes off and then 15 minutes of work every single hour. So you can imagine it's hard work.
For
it's a
2
full-time
years.
Job for 2 years every day. There are no weekends, there's no times off. And then they have a, you know, specific diet. So no sugar, no salt, no alcohol, no coffee, no meat, no mostly very few grains. There's a lot of no's. Basically, mostly it's a huge quantity of fresh organic vegetables and fruit, and root vegetables, and they consume a lot of food, but a lot of specific food.
And coffee enemas.
So that's
a lot of them.
Yeah, they start out doing 5 a day, and then slowly they bring them down. Usually, so the theory. Remember, none of this has been tested. None of this has been proven. There have been no studies. The theory that they claim is that the food, this hypernutrition, the body's being flooded with these nutrients, that sort of boosts or activates the immune system and activates all sorts of organ functions that have been kind of dormant or suppressed for a while. And also, you know, and suddenly they claim that you have all these toxins flowing through your blood through this good nutrition. And then the coffee enemas are supposed to help eliminate those. They're supposed to help support the liver and help the patients detoxify faster. So that's the theory. Again, never been proven, but what I can say is that a lot of the patients hate the idea of them in the beginning, and Fred in particular, he did not want to do this at all. So his wife had to kind of trick him into it, which they explain in the film. But then they actually feel better after they do them.
And Fred sort of got to like him.
Got to like them because he actually had bone metastases, so he had a lot of pain when he was starting. And that went away. So
and he's doing really well right now.
Oh, he's doing wonderful.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Can't argue with success.
No. and in Fred's case, he doesn't have. It's not known whether he's in remission because he didn't do the biopsy and, you know, other invasive tests. All he knows is that his PSA levels, which is one of the cancer markers for prostate cancer, are very low and stable. So usually if a tumor grows or if there's any sort of problem, then that PSA test will go up, and that's not the case. So as long as that the PSA test remains stable like that, the doctors are saying he doesn't need to do any other tests. So.
And he looks really good on.
Yeah, and during the tour when he came to the screenings, he looks even better now.
Yeah.
Like I was like, wow, how did you do that? Yeah, he looks very good.
Yeah, but you know, it's daunting. I mean, I don't know how many people would jump into this therapy. I mean, it's pretty serious.
It's very serious. It's very difficult. It's also because it's not, you know, covered by health insurance. It's also very costly because you can't work at the same time. So in an ideal case, you will hire somebody to help you make the juices and prepare the foods. Otherwise, it's really hard going for a long time. And so that, you know, and then you have to pay for the supplements. So it adds
up. And it's organic
up.
Foods, and that's expensive.
And it's all organic foods,
out.
Yeah. So it's really not easy under the current circumstances. Now, if health insurances would pay for that or would give patients that option, that would be a different story. Because, of course, it's actually cheaper than a lot of conventional methods for treating cancer. But if you're paying it out of your pocket, it's not easy.
You're listening to Digging in the Dirt. I'm Kevin Gallagher, and we have director Sarah Mabrook with us, who has just about ready to release a great film that I saw tonight, very moving, The Food Cure Hope or Hype. And you can go to the
foodcurefilm.com.
Foodcurefilm.com. So you went into this thinking sort of quackery and stuff, and then explain it to us, the transition, you know, as you went along. When did you start thinking, oh, there might be something to this if done correctly and with diligence?
Well, I think I started thinking that when I saw, first of all, they started to feel really good. They looked better, they felt better, but that is not really an indication for cancer. But mm-hmm. then I also accompanied the patients to their MRIs and to their other tests. And when I started to see some of the markers go down and some of the tumors shrink, like in the case of Christine, that was very, very powerful to see that, you know, black on white in front of your eyes, and to see the doctor sort of saying, this is a miracle. I don't know what's going on. That was quite powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still not convinced. So I thought, you know, maybe what, I don't know, may, you know, it can always happen. But it really took a lot of time and seeing them, you know, after 2 years, I was still, that was originally what I planned to do, to follow them for 2 years, which is the length of the treatment. But I wasn't satisfied that that was really an answer, because 2 years, yeah, I mean, even with stage four cancer, it's very easy to survive 2 years. So that's when I decided to keep following them. And then it's only really with time that I started to see, you know, their blood, all their tests getting better and better and staying stable. So that was, you know, I'm still not convinced that this is the answer. I don't think, you know, it's black and white. I don't think medicine is that simple. I don't think it means that everyone who will do this treatment or similar treatments is going to be cured. I do think that there's enough indication and there are enough cases of spontaneous remissions, like some of those in the film. You know, they call them spontaneous remissions.
I heard you say you don't like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, spontaneous sort of implies that they didn't do anything, that it just happened out of the blue. And, you know, in these cases, and apparently in most spontaneous remission cases, people do something. People do make changes. And I think, like Dr. Kelly Turner, who's in the film, she studies these cases, and she found that they have, you know, several things in common, several factors in common, one of them being a radical change in their nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I think these things should be studied and not ignored.
Do you think they will be studied?
I do. I think there's resistance, and the medical industry it's very conservative, and it's also very large. It's a huge boat. It takes time to move it. There are also some financial interests that are, you know,
funding doctors and hospitals and research.
Yeah, and you know, drugs are more lucrative, obviously, than organic produce. Nobody's going to make much off of that. But I don't think that's the only factor. I also think that it's a mentality thing. It's very hard to sort of shift gears completely for a lot of doctors, because they don't have training in nutrition. They don't have training in this lifestyle things. Until several years ago, the assumption was that cancer is mostly genetic. And it's only since a few years, thanks to some studies that were published in Nature magazine and others, that we know that actually, no, 70 to 90% of cancers are due to environmental factors and lifestyle factors. So, you know, that is changing minds, and it's also changing the approach. And I think my hope, at least, is that 10 to 15 years from now, using nutrition and other lifestyle changes along with, you know, other conventional treatments will be standard practice.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the medical profession and also the public are coming around to the fact that there's a lot of stuff going on in their diets, from the things they use in farming and the things that they are using in their cleansers, and it's changing attitudes, and I think they're demanding what you're talking about.
Well, I think it's the public that is driving it. You know, the change is not going to come from the doctors. It's not going to come from the researchers. It's not going to come from the medical authorities. It's going to come from the patients demanding change. And that's already happening. You know, and it's like with electric cars or whatever, there's going to be a moment where, you know, health providers and companies that don't offer more integrative, more holistic approaches are simply going to lose out. They're going to be redundant. And that moment is coming. So I think that the smart ones in healthcare know that they have to integrate this, they have to adapt, because that's what people want, and that's what, you know, there's more and more demand for it.
I just want to go back to your cast of characters again. It was very moving to see some of the progression, and some of it was successful and some of it wasn't. How hard was it when it wasn't? I mean, it must have been really tough.
Yeah, it was. It was not very nice, especially in one case where I thought things were going well, and then surprisingly they ended up differently. So I, as I said, I got quite close to each of these protagonists over time, and of course it's very difficult to see them suffer.
Do you think some of it was due to the fact that they weren't as the one that passed away? She seemed to have strayed from the regime, that she wasn't doing exactly like she should have been doing. Do you think that had something to do with it?
There's really no way of saying, you know, she could have done it perfectly and would have had the same result. There's really, you know, that's exactly why studies are needed, to see the problem is that people are doing this kind of blindly without knowing what works and what doesn't, and in which cases it works, in which cases maybe it's not so smart to use that as the single approach. It's very hard to know if it would have gotten any better, or, you know, if it would have been different.
I thought of one thing when I was watching your film. It says it really is, you are what you eat.
Yeah, that's something that really struck me in doing this film and following the patients. It's completely changed the way I view food, and you know, it shows you just the power, the sheer power of nutrition and what you're putting into your body, how that becomes you, mm-hmm, over time, and how that can even, you know, even when things in your body are going completely wrong with nutrition, you have the ability to maybe change the course of that, and that's just unbelievably empowering.
Mm-hmm. I'm on my daughter's case. She has my 2-year-old grandson, Luke, who I say it's really important now, especially as a baby. They're much more sensitive, and I believe that a lot of these things, the chemicals that were causing autism and things like that, there's just too much of a shock to the system, and things are happening, especially to babies. And I was seeing my grandson and Jeremiah in your film. It was an amazing story, Jeremiah alone.
Yeah, Jeremiah is both an amazing story as a case. I think it's the most, you know, extreme and compelling case in the film, because his cancer was really very, very life-threatening, and the chemotherapy that they wanted him to undergo for 2 to 3 years, depending on the hospital, was very aggressive chemotherapy, and the side effects would have been probably detrimental. At least that's what the doctors said. So that's a really startling case. And what was really fun about Jeremiah was that he grew up with this food. He grew up with these vegetable juices and with this, you know, incredibly healthy, organic, vegetable-based diet. And he didn't know anything else. So for him, that was food. And interestingly, so Tanya, his mother, would sometimes offer him just to see, like, meat or chocolate cake or other things. And he actually wasn't interested.
Wow.
Because he didn't recognize it as food. And now, later on, of course, now, you know, he's healthy and he eats other things as well, but he still loves that food that he grew up with. So it's so interesting that if that's what you know, if that's what you teach your child, that's the taste they develop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's really important what they eat in these first years, because probably that taste will stay with them for that preference will stay with them for the rest of their life. So Jeremiah is still crazy about onions. He adores onions, and he talks like he gets these, like, his eyes shine when he sees onions the way other kids' eyes shine when they see ice cream. And that's just, you know, amazing to watch.
That was an amazing scene where he's in class and everybody's eating junk food and meat and all kinds of stuff, and he's there eating his fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
It was really, really cute. We're talking to Sarah Mabrook, and she has directed and shot. She's a multi-talented woman, a great film called The Food Cure, and you can see more about it at the foodcurefilm.com. When's it going to come out?
Sometime in the first quarter of 2019, it'll be available online on our website. It's actually available on COD, that's Cinema On Demand, so you can go to our website and ask for it to be shown at your local cinema. And so we're having showings across the U.S. and Canada that way.
Cool. Well, it's you did a good job, and it's you must be kind of relieved it's about over.
Yeah.
Now this is the fun part, you know, talking to everybody about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was also a lot of fun doing it, and really interesting. It opened my eyes to so many things that I would have never thought and never been interested in. I was really not into nutrition or any of this stuff. And now, you know, once you go down this rabbit hole, so the food leads you to the soil leads, you know, it becomes, and I'm not able to get out of the rabbit hole. I, you know, a part of me wants to go back to work in the Middle East, but I'm like, now I'm obsessed with the soil.
They need you in the Middle East too, with food and soil. They have
true.
The same problems.
Absolutely.
The world has got bad soil. I mean, that's the same thing has happened to me doing Digging in the Dirt. I to talk to all these people, and now my garden, I have cover crops in my garden at home, you know. It's like,
yeah, I want to move to the countryside because I want a garden, you know. It's like, I'm not satisfied anymore with sourcing the best local organic vegetables. Now I want to grow them myself, and I feel really frustrated that I can't in Berlin where I live.
You won't get me talking you out of it, because I love gardening. That's just why I started this show, just so I can talk to everybody and learn.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be my next thing.
It's all connected.
And that's something you see very clearly when you start about this. Medicine, agriculture, food, and really everything else, but particularly these three things are extremely tightly connected. And you can't really work on one without the other. So medicine without looking at agriculture and food is not really effective medicine. And food is in part medicine, so it's all very, very connected.
Well, Sarah Mabrook, thank you very much for joining me here on Digging in the Dirt. I appreciate it.
Thank you for asking me.
Digging in the dirt, digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.